Welcome to This Is What Democracy Looks Like, the podcast hosted by me, Mary Layton. In this podcast, we explore the good, the bad, and the frankly weird side of different democratic systems around the world. Now, today we're going to be hearing about democracy in India with a father and daughter team of my guests, Vidya and Venkat. And as is normal in our conversations, we will be dividing this into two podcast episodes, so make sure you check out the second half. Now, just a note of caution, this episode was actually recorded in September 2022 as part of Season 1. It's taken me a while to publish for reasons that I'm going to explain in a moment, but if you don't care about any of those reasons and you want to get right into the good stuff, feel free to fast forward over the next 7 minutes or so to the start of the interview. I won't be offended because I'm not there listening to it with you, so I don't know. So anyway, let's get going. So this episode is actually dedicated to my dad, Mark Layton, who died this spring in England, and to his friend Sastry Pandya, who passed away from COVID in India. My dad was both a fan of the podcast and a fan of India, so he was really looking forward to me finishing this episode so he could hear it. Sorry, Dad. To be fair, though, part of the reason it's taken so long to finish is because I was very preoccupied during the last months of his illness. The irony, right? Anyway, growing up, I heard a lot about India because my dad was kind of obsessed with the place and had been planning to go there on a pilgrimage his whole life. So what does this have to do with the podcast? Well, going to India was this thing I heard about my entire childhood, all through my life. My dad talking about this thing that was his ambition. At one point in his life, he was going to go and take this big trip. And honestly, I was always skeptical. I didn't think it would ever happen. And if it did happen, I was worried that the real India would never actually live up to the image he had in his head of this amazing spiritual place where people and animals lived in perfect harmony with nature. And I'm exaggerating a little, but this is what my teenage memories of this feeling were like, right? Anyway, a couple of years ago, just after he turned 70, and only a year or two before he received his cancer diagnosis, my dad actually finally made his pilgrimage. He had been waiting his entire life for this moment, and, you know, he'd been waiting for the moment to be perfect, and the perfect moment had never came, so he just said, screw it, I'm just gonna go. And he went and he made a good friend, Sastry, who organized this incredible trip for him. And, you know, it turned out to be everything he had always hoped for and more. It turned out to be one of the highlights of his very full life. He made a wonderful friend, and it was a really important part of his life. And I take two things from this. One is that if there is something you've always wanted to do, just do it. Don't wait until you're 70. You know, it took my dad 50 years to take this pilgrimage he'd been talking his entire life about, right? I'd always wanted to do this podcast, right? And it's not perfect. I've been waiting 10 years to do this. And I've had to take breaks because life happens. But I'm getting to have these amazing conversations and I'm having so much fun doing it. I'm glad that you guys are listening to it and enjoying it too. But there's no such thing as a perfect time, and just do it. Just do it. If there's something you've always wanted to do, just do it now, right? But the second thing I take from my dad's obsession with India is a desire to actually find out more what this country is really like. Like, his interest in this country has been the backdrop to my life in many ways, and I could fill a whole other podcast with a series about the weirdness and complexity of white British people's obsession with places like India or Japan or the East in general. But now I have more of a desire to really understand what this real three-dimensional country is like. This place with its own concerns and histories that's quite capable of seeing through and rejecting the condescensions of its former colonizers or anything like the dreamscape of white Europeans who go there and have their own thing going on. So I explain all this to say that I came to this interview, I understand, with a whole bunch of my personal baggage. And I really hope that that didn't get in the way of this conversation. I didn't burden my interviewees with explaining all of this, but I explain it now because I think it's important to be upfront about these things, and I hope that this did not get in the way of the conversation we had. But yeah, so this episode is for my dad and for Sastry. And yeah, I'm with the message of, if there's something you always wanted to do, go do it, guys. Go do it now. Okay, on with the podcast. Okay, so welcome. Let's get started. I would like to introduce my two wonderful guests. Today we have two generations from the same family.
So I'm Vidya. I'm a software engineer in the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
I live in San Jose. I'm 33 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm from the southern part of India. I'm from a city called Chennai in India.
Okay. Yep.
And in India, where you come from is a big deal because it's such a huge country. And
right.
There are people from different parts of the country, different states who speak different languages. And I speak Tamil, which is my mother tongue.
Yep.
So that's it about me. So I've been living here in the Bay Area for the last... about 11 years, 10
11
years.
Ah, right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I've lived in India for 21 years
mm-hmm.
of my life. And then I moved to the US. I did my master's in the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And then I found a job in the Bay Area and I've been here since.
Ah, right. Okay. And here in the US, are you a joint citizen? Are you able to vote here?
No, I'm not. I'm still a visitor in this country and we're still going through the immigration process, which is...
Of course.
A very lengthy process for people from India.
Oh my goodness, I can only imagine. I'm sorry. Well, I've heard about it from people and I know it takes a really long time. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. And Venkat, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Venkat Subramanian. I'm a chemical engineer. I come from southern part of India, of course, as Vidya told.
Mm-hmm.
I've been living in Chennai since
1985, right?
Yeah, but I was born down south in India, and I lived the first 21 years in a town, village, in a rural setup, basically.
Okay, yeah.
Then I took up my first job in Mumbai,
mm-hmm.
a big city in India.
Mm-hmm.
Then I came down to Chennai.
Mm-hmm.
I come from probably engineering society, basically. That's what... Mm-hmm. I would like to call myself, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
In Chennai, of course, it's a big city. It's it has a population of 4 million now, yes.
Oh, wow, okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's a big city, yes. Mm. Cultural center of India. And I've been following politics since 1967. Those days, we used to watch radio or... Mm. Thing you get news only once in few hours I've been having some interest in politics in the sense that I follow. It's not that I'm directly involved in politics.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good subject to talk about, yes.
Democracy,
because I think everybody is now talking of, is there democracy in US now, whether we continue to have democracy in US,
exactly.
Even in US.
Yeah,
but then probably we have to define democracy. Probably at one time they talked about the democracy is something of the people, by the people, for the people.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it is of the people, for the people, but then by the politicians, as you can probably say now, because there is a separate class that is now called the political class. And they probably have only that as a profession in India now, politicians. Mm. Have that as the only profession.
Oh, okay.
So that's about me. I'm 66 years old now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm retired, yes. I'm enjoying my retired life.
Mm-hmm.
I spend probably 4 or 5 months in US. I'm visiting here year now for the last 5 or 6 years, yes.
Yeah. But most of the time you live back home? That's your home base?
Yes, in Chennai. Yes. Most of the times in Chennai.
Okay, fantastic. Well, this is going to be interesting because you seem to have both a longer term perspective, but also if you're spending 5 months of the year here in the US as well as back home, I guess you probably have seen quite a bit of the comparison as well. Whereas Vidya, you've been living here, so you have that.
True.
different kind of perspective too. Okay, well, thank you both. One of the things I want to think about before we even start, because we're going to start getting into, so what is the basic organization? What's the difference between the president and prime minister? Is there any specific big issue happening right now in India, like an election or something else that people are really talking about that we should keep in mind while we're talking?
There are a few issues that are ongoing, but mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if they should be front and center of this podcast. It's just internal politics, I think, to a great extent. I'm not, you know, as interested and as, you know, as keen on politics as my dad is. So he probably has, you know, some other.
Yeah. That's totally fine. That's totally
fine. As far as I'm concerned, it's quite normal. It's quite normal. Yeah. Like, you know, politics in India, like in everywhere else in the world, mm-hmm. is a bit polarized now. That's what I would say.
Okay.
You know, that is the thing. India is no exception there. Politics is polarized, too polarized a bit.
Let's get into some of the basics. So what is the basic organization? I know this is a really huge question. I've noticed with lots of the interviews I've done with people in Latin America, they seem to have a similar system to the US in that it's an upper and lower house, often called Congress, and usually something similar like House of Representatives. What's the system in India? What do you call the different levels of the government?
So for us, it's very similar to the UK, I believe. Mm-hmm. So we have the prime minister who, you know, holds the highest office, who's in charge of things. Mm-hmm. But the president is the ceremonial head of state.
Okay, right.
And we also have, you know, a couple of houses, which is the, we have the Lok Sabha, which is where members are elected to by the people. Mm-hmm. And then we have the Rajya Sabha, which is like the state, which is the upper house and the lower house, if you will have it.
Okay, yeah.
And we have general elections every 5 years.
Parliamentary
elections. And we also have elections for the state legislative assemblies, to which the chief ministers are elected for every state. Mm-hmm. So that's the general system. So the chief minister holds the highest office in the mm-hmm. state in India. Mm-hmm. And there is a governor who is similar to the president, who's the ceremonial head of the state.
Okay, yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of a short, you know, overview of, you know, how things work. I think my dad can go into more details.
Well, I was wondering, both houses, are all the members elected?
So for the Lok Sabha, yes, they are. Mm-hmm. For the Rajya Sabha, they are, not all of them are elected, is that right?
Oh, okay.
Can I just interrupt?
Please.
The Lok Sabha, the lower house, mm-hmm. they're elected directly by the people.
Okay.
The Rajya Sabha members are elected by the state MLAs or state, what do you call, state senators or state representatives.
Okay, yeah.
You know, each state, you know, they have their own, you know, government. Mm-hmm. Now, they have elected representatives. Those representatives, they're members of Rajya Sabha from each state.
Okay, okay.
So India has 25 states and 8 union territories. Just to give you an idea, mm-hmm. you're talking of 1.4, 1.5 billion population, of which maybe 1 billion nearly mm-hmm. exercise their voting. Mm-hmm. They are eligible to vote.
Yeah.
Maybe 70% of them vote in every election. Mm-hmm. We have elections not only for the parliament, mm-hmm. for probably we have to talk about the election at rural level. We have village election, panchayat elections, municipality elections, you know, which a state decides, mm-hmm. and then state elections. Then you have the central or, you know, the union elections.
The national ones.
Yeah, national one. Mm-hmm. As Vidya explained, we have a lower house, which is Lok Sabha. Mm-hmm. We have 539 seats now, yes.
Okay, yeah.
And different states. India, as I said, 25 states mm-hmm, plus 8 mm-hmm. union territories. And each state, depending on the population, they have a number of parliamentary constituencies.
So I have a bunch of questions now. Yes. My first one being, when you vote in the national elections, do you vote for the prime minister or do you vote for the prime minister's party? So is it more similar to the British or the American system?
It's not the American system. It's a British system. We vote for the candidates who represent the party.
The party,
then
right.
Then the party MPs elect the prime minister.
Okay.
But the party normally announces the prime minister candidate.
Yeah.
Because by and large, it's still the individuals who run the show, mm-hmm. in the sense that people know the prime minister.
So you may have heard that in the UK, we now have this situation where we have Liz Truss, who is somebody who is very unpopular. But she, mm-hmm. for instance, has become prime minister without having an election, because the last election we vote for the Conservatives and then mm-hmm. it doesn't matter. They can decide who the head is.
Yeah.
Would you ever have a similar situation in India where you had voted for a party and then they changed their leader halfway
of
through
course.
Their term?
Yes.
Yes? Oh, okay.
It
okay,
had happened many times earlier.
Okay. Yeah.
When we had a sort of a coalition government. You know, it happens when one party doesn't have, you know, the majority.
Yeah.
We had that sort of a system running for some time. Mm-hmm. At that time, you have a lot of confusion, you know.
Yeah.
Then you have the prime ministers changing, yes.
Yeah.
But now it's a more or less steady, yes.
Okay.
And I also want to like point out in the recent past, you don't always know who the prime minister is going to be. So, for example, like a couple of general elections back, when the Congress had the majority votes, we thought Sonia Gandhi, who's the daughter-in-law of Indira Gandhi, we thought she was going to be the prime minister. But then it was decided that Manmohan Singh, an alternate candidate, would be the prime minister. So there are surprises that way. You don't always know.
So tell me, how you said there was one party, the Congress Party, I think you said, that had been in power for 50 years. How many parties are there now?
There are, on paper, probably 7-8 national parties.
Mm-hmm.
But Congress and BJP now, they are the two strong national parties because they have a good presence in most of the states. Congress in all the states.
Mm-hmm.
BJP has more presence in North India than in South India,
mm-hmm.
but it's slowly coming up.
So I'm always interested. Vidya, when I first came to the US, something that I found strange was that there were like these political dynasties, like the Bush Senior, Bush Junior, and then the Clintons and so on. I'm wondering what your perspective is, because it sounds like a similar thing happened in India as well.
Yeah, in India, so my perspective is slightly different. I actually think India is a lot about dynasty politics.
Interesting,
you see, you know, even in our state, the current chief minister is the son of an ex-chief minister in India. And
mm-hmm.
But in the US, when I look at the Bushes and the Clintons,
mm-hmm.
To an extent, I mean, that can be called dynasty politics, but I'm somebody who's, you know, read a lot about Hillary Clinton and mm-hmm. Bill Clinton in parallel. Mm-hmm. And I find it very fascinating that they are very capable people, in mm-hmm. my opinion. It's not just handed over to them.
Okay.
At least
yeah.
to me, my opinion is that in the US, you know, you work for it.
Okay.
So people
yeah.
are, you know, capable, and it so happens that they belong to the same family. Doesn't mean that,
interesting,
you know, they didn't earn it.
Yeah.
But in India, on the other hand, I feel like things are just handed over generation to generation. That's my view, at least.
Interesting. Well, tell me more about that and how people respond to that.
Let me put it this way. In politics, whether it is in US or in India, there are two things.
Mm-hmm.
One is the money.
Of course, yes.
One is money. Then other thing is that you work for it for a long time, mm-hmm. and then you come to power based on your history of
mm-hmm.
doing something for the country.
Yeah.
Now, even in US, it's money which plays a big part.
Of course.
There's no question about it.
Mm-hmm.
And world over, as I see it, in the last decade or so, people mm-hmm. have lost their interest in the politicians.
Mm-hmm.
That is the so-called professional politicians.
I see.
You know,
yeah.
People who come to politics and then they remain in politics and then they try to make something out of that politics.
I see.
When in the good old days, when you think why people come to politics is they want to serve the people.
Mm-hmm.
And in our state in Tamil Nadu, there was a chief minister who had not gone to school,
mm-hmm.
but he was a chief minister who worked for the people.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't have any time for his family or
mm-hmm.
anything.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't make any money or anything.
Mm-hmm.
He worked for the people. He was the first one to introduce midday meals in the schools way
mm-hmm,
back in 1965 or whatever. So that people, children can come to school, because we have a lot of poor people, and then they can't come to school unless they have a good food. So the family sends them to work. In order to make them come to school, he said, we'll give food in the school. So that sort of people were there in a good old days. They are not there now. So whether it is US or India, if we say that, okay, one is money. If you have money, then you are in politics. In India, the same thing happens. People in money come to politics, and they think that they are to, they spend money to win election. And then they think their job is to take that money back.
Well, I'm hearing two things now. I'm hearing two things. Yeah. I'm hearing on the one side, the video saying that sometimes there are situations where you're just handed a political position because you're the son or the daughter or the niece or the nephew. And on the other, a kind of ideal situation that existed in the past where people worked for it and were elected based on what they did. So is it that things have changed, or is it that both these things exist at the same time?
I think both these things exist at the same time. So in my opinion, you know, the ruling party is a bit more about, you know, people who have kind of earned their position. I mean, at least, like, they don't come from a family of politicians.
Yeah.
People who, you know, whatever their agenda is, I mean, they're still not,
right.
If you see the opposition, which is the Congress, the president is Sonia Gandhi, who's the daughter-in-law of, you know, very famous political family in India, right? And Rahul Gandhi, he is, again, the son of Sonia Gandhi. So it's the Gandhi family that has predominantly dominated the Congress party.
Right.
And Rahul Gandhi, a lot of people, you know, have questions about, you know, his ability to, you know, lead the party, but he's still there because he's
the importance of that name. I mean, I'm thinking as we're talking about this that it was recently the 75th anniversary of independence.
Yes.
And I remember when I talked to people about democracy in Latin America, I'm not saying it's the same, but in a similar sort of vein, they would say to me, the reason people take democracy so seriously is because they have the memory of having been in a dictatorship, and you take democracy very seriously when your democracy is young. I wonder if you see something similar. I mean, Venkat, you seem to be talking about the idealized days in the 60s and 70s. Was there a sense of that democracy has become corrupted because we no longer care about it? We take it for granted now.
No, one thing is that democracy is becoming corrupted because people are after power, basically. You know, that's one. But leaving that aside, democracy, in my opinion, is very strong in India, basically because people, you know, vote for some party with some good intention. And then if they don't deliver, then they vote for somebody else in the next election. So it's not that in India, the same party comes to power the next time around.
I see.
Now,
yeah.
You can say that, okay, they have made so much of a fortune in, you know, they have not done much for the people. So, but people have that power to change. For example, Indira Gandhi declared emergency. People didn't like it. Then they voted her out
in
the next
election. Yeah.
Okay. If you see, say, communists ruled in two states, in West Bengal, five terms, six terms, 30 years under communist rule. But now communists have gone out. Very few such instances.
Okay.
And if you have a strong and good leader, then they are given opportunities again and again.
Okay.
One thing I missed out is that dictatorship is never in India.
Yeah.
Because
we
have the systems in such a way that that is not going to be easy in India. Maybe it can happen in US. I don't know really.
That's the question.
But India, till something happens like January 6th, I don't think India is there yet. It's not going to be there.
I was thinking more in terms of having the memory of not having been able to vote in the Indian case because of colonialism, in the Latin American case because of they had a dictatorship. Yeah.
But our democracy, in my opinion, is so strong in the sense that. They vote in, as I said, village panchayat. They vote in state elections.
Yeah.
The thing is that the corruption, the money played there, and then the family politics. But then the thing is that what happens is when a first generation politician makes money, then his family people are more exposed to the people. So people are looking for some space, some face which is known.
I see.
Okay,
yeah.
So that family has money, and then they have a known face, so they get again elected. That's how it goes. And then, of course, we have various other factors in India, because everybody starts a party if he has some following. And then they try to, you know, form some alliance, and then try to see if they can share power. You know, that's how it goes. Because if you share power, if you have power, you can make something. That's a thing. But of late, I understand a lot of youngsters are coming into politics.
A lot
of people who have worked in professional areas, like, you know, administration, like police, administrating service, you know, people in government jobs. They resign the jobs and then they come to politics.
I see.
You know, so, that's happening in India. But of late, also the nationalistic feeling is there.
Yes. Yeah.
People want to see India as a superpower. Now they say it is economically, it's in the fifth place, moving ahead of UK now. Definitely, democracy is vibrant in India. No question about it.
So, Vijay, I'm seeing you smiling. I'm wondering if you're agreeing with everything your dad is saying. So I want to give you an opportunity.
Yes, I do think your democracy is, you know, thriving in India, and especially, like, just going back to, you know, when I was growing up, right? I grew up in India, and, you know, we have neighbors where, you know, democracy hasn't really done that well, right? You have a Pakistan that, you know, goes under, you know, army dictatorship every now and then. I mean, it doesn't have a strong democracy. And then there is China, on the other hand, where it's, you know, it's the Communist Party, right?
Yeah.
And then you have Afghanistan, which has its share of problems, right?
Yes.
And Sri Lanka is, you know, has been under civil war for a very long time. And in that region, you know, we feel like India has, you know, done really well, despite its neighbors not being in a good shape. And,
interesting. Yeah. So it's kind of the comparison to everything that's around. It feels like a strong...
In my opinion, sorry to interrupt, it's my opinion, it's the nature of the people there. The thing is that people may complain, but they just go about their job. You know, they may think that I have not got this, I have not got that, but it doesn't matter. Somebody is making money, that's okay. You know, as far as I'm concerned, let me go with my life, you know. So, okay, when I get an opportunity to vote, I will vote. That's it.
Yeah. So I'm interested in, we've mentioned a couple of times about state elections, and I'm trying to sort of get an idea of what the relationship between the states and the national politics. What's that relationship between, like, as a federal system? Is it more like the US, where they're very, very separate and there's this constant battle? Or is it more like I learned about Mexico, where it's much more integrated?
I think it's more separate, like in the US. But it's not separate in years because it's the same parties which fight. What happens in India is that the two major parties, Congress and BJP, they fight directly only in, out of 25 states, maybe 10 states.
Oh, interesting. Okay, yeah.
In the remaining states, probably there are other players, the regional players.
Okay.
Now, Congress and the BJP have to form an alliance with one of the regional players and then try to, you know, that's how it is.
That makes sense of something I was wondering, because you were talking about both there being lots of parties and coalitions, but also one party having rule for 50 years and the other one having rule for 9 years. So it's that in some of the states, there are small regional parties and the main two national parties have to form coalitions with them.
Exactly.
And does that change, or is it that only ever certain states are sort of like involved in that coalition building?
You know, what has happened is Congress dominated early so much. There was no other major party for a long, long time. Only when Indira Gandhi lost the election or she introduced emergency, then, you know, some of the opposition parties, which were so small, you know, they came together to form a coalition. They, in fact, joined together to start a new party.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. And they ruled for only a couple of years. And then because they were all different, ideology and things like that, it collapsed. And then Indira Gandhi came back.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Out of that, at that time, that BJP was one in that. The BJP, when they came out, they said, okay, now we will not join. We will try to strengthen our organization.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they went about. You know, probably in 1980s, they had probably 10 seats in the parliament. Now they have 300 seats.
Right.
So
right.
In 20, 25 years, they grew like, you know, they took the government and they worked for it.
Yeah. Because I know in the US there's often a lot of contention between the federal government and the states, the individual states. And I was wondering if that was the case in India as well.
Only in US I find that probably a number of times presidents are elected, presidents who don't get popular vote, they get elected as president.
Yes.
It's an irony in the sense that the majority of the people have voted not for this man, or you can say against this man.
Yeah, exactly.
There's somebody whom they wanted to become president, but then somebody else becomes president, and the system probably is not all that good.
Well, yes, I would agree with you.
that means democracy, what we call, is not one.
Yeah, exactly.
There
exactly.
are different forms of democracy.
Mm-hmm.
And then, okay, this has some something in it to ensure that all states have equal power or some such thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But then a democracy, when you say democracy, it's people, overall people, majority of people.
Exactly.
So the majority thing is not happening in the US because they have some sort of a system by which
it's a very strange system that no one really understands. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And then nobody wants to talk about it or try to address it.
So, yes, I mean, the 2016 general elections, right? We all know what happened in the US, right? I mean, I think a lot of us were looking in disbelief at the results, and
because
that's when I heard for the first time about, you know, Electoral College.
Me too, right? Yeah.
I hadn't known about that, and it was very surprising.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as my dad points out, does that really mean this is a democracy? Because the majority of the people did not vote for somebody, but it is what the system is here.
Yeah.
So, and going back to, you know, what we were talking about in India, right, the relationship between the state and the center.
Yes.
So just wanted to add that, you know, in the last general election, the ruling party actually did not need the coalition, to form their government.
Oh, okay.
They had the, you know, majority, they had the mandate of the people all by themselves. But interestingly, the state that we come from, the state of Tamil Nadu, the ruling the BJP, which is, you know, the ruling party of India, has never had a stronghold there.
Oh, interesting.
You know,
yeah,
they've never had a strong presence there. So it's just a party in the state that dominates. So in that sense, I found the two to be, you know, fairly disconnected. Because I've closely followed the politics of my state only, and I haven't spent a lot of time looking at what's happening in other states. So I've always looked at them as, you know, fairly disconnected.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in the US, because, you know, the parties are the same, right? You just have those two parties. I feel it's a lot more connected there.
My observation towards that is that when the BJP doesn't win seats from Tamil Nadu, still when they formed the government, they had probably 2-3 ministers from Tamil Nadu.
Sure.
You want to give representation to the areas where they have not voted for the ruling party, but looking at future, okay, if you make some people ministers from that area, maybe that will influence the people to vote for that ruling party next time.
Yeah, that also just suggests to me that you can be a voter and your focus can really be on your own state. And there's enough power within the state to make decisions about your life that, in a sense, you can almost ignore some of the federal stuff, which suggests that the state level has a big influence on what happens in your life and the kind of things that can get done, as opposed to it just being a symbolic kind of boundary. Does that... I'm thinking particularly of what Vidya said. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
To an extent, yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So thinking of symbolic things, tell me a little bit about the president and the relationship between the president and the prime minister. So the way you described it before, it reminded me, honestly, of the queen, whose role is just to sign things and to be there to be the official head, but actually to have no power. Can you tell me a little bit about how you see it?
I see it pretty much the same way.
The same way? Yeah.
Yeah, just a ceremonial head, some kind of a gatekeeper, but I mean, it's just a figurehead of the state. I don't see the president having any power.
Any real power, yeah, yeah. I noticed when I was reading that the current president, she was a woman, yeah, for a start.
Yes.
And she was a woman from one of the indigenous groups, is that correct? Or tribal groups, I think it was described
in
English.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that something that does have important symbolic power?
Does that have importance?
Yes, yeah.
It does, yes. Yeah. You know, the thing is, the president, even though the parliament, makes the laws or whatever is that, it has to be signed by the president for it to become a law.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, in case, some ruling party, they have absolute majority, they can push certain things, and then opposition are asking so many questions, they don't get enough explanations, and it's not... they want some modification, ruling party, because they have a brutal majority. They vote party-wise and then they send that thing to the president for signature. The president has a right to send it back to the parliament
and do they
to
ever
show
do
her that? Concern that, look, you evolve consensus, modify this thing and then see that everybody accepts something and then bring it to me. President has the power to do that.
But do they use that power?
Sometimes, not all the times.
Okay.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes they use. But president has that power.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it exists, yeah.
It exists, yes. Some people have done it in the past, yes.
Okay. Okay, we are going to take a break here, but look out for the second half of this conversation, which is going to be coming up in the next episode, the second half of this conversation about India. And if you enjoyed this, you can also go to our website, www.democracyinpodcast.com, that's all one word, and there you can find information about the series, you can find other episodes with other countries, and you can also find ways to support us, send us money so that we can keep this going. Okay, thanks guys. See you next time.